And tonight on Coast to Coast AM, Father Nicholas Gruner back here on Coast to Coast as we talk about the apparitions of Fatima and what that all means to all of us. He's also a noted author, World Enslavement or Peace and the Devil's Final Battle. Back in a moment with Father Gruner on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Father Nicholas Gruner, widely known as the Fatima Priest, and for more than 35 years, he has devoted his priestly mission to promoting the Catholic Church approved message of Fatima, which is a series of apparitions the Blessed Virgin Mary to three children in Fatima, Portugal, back in 1917. He heads an international organization called the Fatima Center, offices worldwide. Welcome back, Father Nicholas Gruner. Always a pleasure, Father. How are you?
Good. Good to be here, George. Thanks very much for having me on tonight.
So much is going on this planet these days, but I've got to get your reaction to Pope Benedict the 16th calling it quits. What do you think?
Well, it's quite a surprise. Although I'd heard he was planning to do that a few years ago, but then the talk stopped, so I forgot about it. I was in Rome when he made the announcement on the 11th of February, and as the Messaggero, the daily paper put it the next day, Pope shock. It was really quite a shock for most people, certainly.
Some people are speculating that there might be a deeper scandal afoot here and that he either didn't want anything to do with it or he just couldn't handle it. What do you think?
Well, the decision was made apparently from all the reports I'm reading that it was after the Vatty Leaks, as they called it, the Vatty Leaks trial was over and the report was handed in by the three cardinals that he decided that it was perhaps too much for him. Although he had been thinking about doing it a year before, but he couldn't stop in the middle of the trial or anything like that for the butler. But once the thing was solved, however, we don't know everything about it because the three cardinals made a special report for his eyes only, and he's not giving it to the cardinals who have to make the decision, but only to the Pope, the cardinal, or presumably the cardinal who's elected. I don't know how that leaves the electors, because then they would have to really leave all the cardinals from the Vatican out and take an outsider, because the Vatican leak scandal, obviously the leak in the Vatican apparatus came from the Vatican.
Yeah, it sure did. Straight from some of his papers, wasn't it?
His papers, definitely. They know that some of them were taken off the secretary, George Ganschwin, Archbishop. He's now Archbishop, and just made Archbishop in January. But the secretary, Monsignor Ganschwin, his papers were taken by the butler and I think photocopied. I'm not quite sure, I got a copy of the book that, Your Holiness, or how it was called, Sua Sanctitas in Italian. I read all the ones that were published. They didn't seem that bad, but they say there's a lot more documents that were not published at all, so we don't know what really was leaked other than the few that they put into this book.
Have you followed the prophecies of St. Malachi, Father?
I have. There are those who claim that the next pope will be the last pope, Peter the Roman. I'm not sure I understand it that way, but I can't say I've studied every last piece about it, but the claim is that the next pope will be Peter the Roman, and that leaves some people to think who of the cardinals will be elected, but I don't think it'll be either one. Certainly, the one is named Cardinal Bertone, who's the Secretary of State. He's also, apparently his other name is Peter, and he was born in some little town called Romanus or something like that, from the north. I don't think that means that it would be him at all. And frankly, I hope not.
It'll be interesting to watch it unfold, won't it?
Yes.
Conclave might meet when? What do you think?
Well, of course, by law, it has to meet by the 20th of March, after 20 days after the seat becomes vacant. It says by law you shouldn't meet until at least 15 days have passed. However, the Pope, Benedict, before he left office, he allowed them to move the date up if they wanted to, if all the cardinals were present, and if they voted in favor of moving it to another date earlier.
And so all the cardinals worldwide are supposed to participate in the selection of the new pope?
Not all the cardinals. Since Paul the VI, it's only the cardinals who are under 80 years old. So the cardinals who are over 80 do not have a vote.
How come?
That's a good question. I think that it's worked for the last 1,000 years. Why change it you know, and but anyway, that's, they changed the rule. Paul VI, I guess, wanted a younger church. However, it's the three cardinals who were over 80 who made this. Not all, there's more than three cardinals over 80, but the Pope appointed three cardinals over 80 to make this report on the Vatican leaks. And I guess if they elect the wrong man, they will find themselves in a hard spot.
There might be, might be. Well, anyways, what's new with you? And then we're going to get into Fatima. What have you been up to?
Well, we've had three conferences in Fatima. In fact, in 2010, we had a conference just before the Pope went to Fatima. And, you know, they were listening to me. We were also broadcasting on the Internet. And so we know that from our IP guys that they were listening in the Vatican. And we had there Giuseppe Dicardi. He's a journalist, but he's also the co-author with Cardinal Bertone of the book called The Fourth Secret of Fatima. The Last Secret of Fatima, or The Last Seer. He changed the name from the Italian to the English. In any case, Dicardi admitted in front of us, I had two lawyers as well as myself questioning him after his presentation, and he admitted that he could have been deceived. His case basically came apart in front of us, and 4 or 5 days after that, Pope Benedict himself said that he deceives himself who thinks the prophetic mission of Fatima is concluded. He could be applying that to Cardinal Bertone, the author of that book. And so that was quite dramatic for us. In fact, in the book, the second edition of Cardinal Bertone's book, Cardinal Bertone has the prefaces written by the Pope, and the Pope acknowledges that these are sheets, that is fogli in Italian, which is the I means it's plural, mm-hmm. instead of folio. And but yet all Cardinal Bertone said the whole secret was one folio. And so I think that pretty well demolished their case. But still, they haven't revealed it to us. If I were a cardinal, I would be asking for it, because that secret is the key to this conclave.
Do you think that secret could be disastrous?
Well, I think the secret in itself will be...
So overwhelming?
It will be very powerful. You know, Malachi Martin was on your program some years ago, and he pointed out how that there's some very powerful and very, very intelligent, very strong personalities in the Vatican, but none of them want to touch the secret because it's so powerful. But I do think it would be a great blessing for the Church, because then finally they'll start correcting the excesses they've had for the last 50 years.
Could the secret, Father, be as horrible as a prediction of the date of the end of the planet?
I don't think so, because Our Lady said in the end her Immaculate Heart will triumph, the Holy Father will consecrate Russia, Russia will be converted, and a period of peace will give in to mankind. That period of peace is not just a few years. If you read the scriptures, it talks about a period of peace going for some time. Then it talks about at least for two generations, for the simple reason that Micaiah, for example, prophesies that they will learn the art of war no more. In other words, they will not pass on from one generation to another the art of warfare, of military prowess, and so forth.
Let's go back to 1917. Tell us about Fatima.
Well, I'm sure you know, George, that the children, as you mentioned, the Blessed Virgin appeared. She appeared on the 13th of the month for 6 months in a row, from the 13th of May, June, July, August, September, October. Of course, the children were kidnapped in August, so she came again on the 19th of August to meet them in August. But she came with a spiritual message above all, but she also spoke about things that would happen to the world. She predicted the Second World War. She predicted the rise of Russia when it was really flat on its back in 1917. She spoke of things yet to happen, such as the annihilation of nations. It's presumed that that would take place by some sort of military, or you know, whether it's atomic or some other kind of military engagement. The Russia will not be annihilated, because Russia's conversion is predicted in the end, and Portugal will not be annihilated, but no other nation has that guarantee in Fatima. So there's basically the Blessed Virgin asked us to pray the rosary every time she came, to pray the rosary in order to obtain peace for the world and the end of the war, pray the rosary every day, mm-hmm. continue praying the rosary every day. This is going on every month. Continue, and she said in October she finally announced who she was. I am the Lady of the Rosary. Continue to pray the Rosary every day. That's certainly one of the messages. Before the Blessed Virgin appeared in 1917, of course, the angel that came at Fatima in 1916 to prepare the children and he taught them to pray and to make sacrifices for sinners. And for example, in the children did not know the day of the year. They didn't know but they knew there was springtime. And so in spring he came the first time. Fear not, I am the angel of peace. Pray with me. And he taught them this prayer: My God, I believe in Thee. I adore Thee. I hope in Thee. I love Thee. I ask pardon for all those who do not believe in Thee, do not hope in Thee, do not adore Thee, do not love Thee. And pray thus, and the hearts of Jesus and Mary are attentive to the voice of your supplications. In the summertime, he came a second time and said, what are you doing? They were playing. They were very fervent at first.
Always in the same area?
Always in the same one. In spring, it was actually in Cabezo, which is, if you've ever been to Fatima,
I've not.
It's the village, the village of Ajustrel is about a mile away from Fatima, and they were about 200 yards in one direction for the first apparition, and made 100 yards in the other direction for the second apparition. And the third apparition of the angel came in at the same place as the first. And so it was spring, summer, and fall. They could tell, of course, by the seasons, and since they were shepherd children. But then by the next year, they knew it was May 13th and so forth. It was when the Blessed Virgin appeared, the children were taking care of their sheep, and they saw a flash. They heard a thunderclap, and they thought it was lightning, but the sky was perfectly blue. There was no clouds in the sky.
And no one else saw the Blessed Virgin Mary?
No one saw there, but they saw, of course, the great miracle that when the children, some people believed them, and some people didn't believe them. Some people were just curious, but obviously, by July, Lucy, the oldest, who spoke to the Blessed Virgin, asked for a sign, and the Blessed Virgin said, I will give you a sign in October, October 13th, and I'll tell you who I am then. So there were 70,000 people who came to Fatima in October, and even though it was a great rainfall, the ground was so full of water and the rain kept coming that they were standing mud up to their ankles.
Okay. But they came to see this miracle?
They came to see the miracle, and they were not disappointed. Even the secular media that came to mock them reported what they saw. The editor of the paper, I'm just trying to think of it, O Secular.
In Portugal,
who had been mocking them and saying that people were foolish to believe these three children, reported quite accurately what he saw.
And this was the sun coming down, right?
Well, it was the sun was spinning in the sky. Lucy pointed to the sky, and then they looked up and the clouds parted. It had been raining up to that point. They could see the sun quite clearly without hurting their eyes. It looked like a silver dish. And then it started to spin, and they could see different colors coming from the sun.
Sounds like a UFO, Father.
Well, some people have thought that.
Yeah.
But what happened was after it spun for a while and then stopped after 4 minutes, it started again and spun for four more minutes and then stopped again. And the third time it spun, this time it started to zigzag in the sky and finally started plunging down towards them. It became very large in the sky, very hot, and the people thought it was going to fall on top of them. So they fell on their knees in the mud to ask God for mercy and forgiveness.
Could it have been a UFO? Is that possible?
Well, what happened next was the sun went back to its regular position, and meanwhile the ground was dry and their clothes were dry, and it's been estimated by engineers that it would have taken the energy of a minor atomic bomb, and they would have all been fried by that energy, yet no one was hurt. In fact, a number of people were cured at the same time.
See, my astronomical mind says there's no way the sun, 93 million miles away, could come down any closer before it fried the planet.
Well, this is what the miraculous part of it is that it wasn't registered anywhere else except in Fatima.
They're the only ones who saw the sun come down.
Well,
or whatever.
There were people 20 miles away, like the poet laureate of Portugal, I've forgotten his name, lived in a village, and he saw this happening, as did other school children and teachers in some villages around, but 10, 15, 20 miles away. But apart from that area, no one else saw this, yes.
Okay, so after these 70,000 people witnessed this, and we'll call it the sun coming down, what happened?
Well, then, as I say, the people got up from their knees and they noticed that their clothes were dry, and there were people that came for cures and they were given cures. I mean, people who couldn't see or couldn't walk were There were so many miracles that I think they stopped collecting them anymore. But in fact, there are still 5,700 documents that haven't been published yet, even though they tell us that they've given everything to us. The archivist of Fatima who was appointed to collect all these documents, the Vatican has forbidden them to be published to this day. But from what we know, certainly there were many testimonies. In fact, I've collected some myself when I was there in 87 with my cameraman to have a description of the sun. But basically, what happened? People were cured, and they were all convinced. You know, the one of the few men that didn't see it was, in fact, the man who kidnapped the children, the mayor of Oram, who kidnapped the children in August.
What do you mean he kidnapped the children?
Well, he arrested them. He claimed he was going to bring them to the Kova. The Kova is the field not far from Fatima where the children saw Our Lady.
He probably thought they were lying, right?
Well, no, but he threatened them with death. He threatened to boil them in oil if they wouldn't...
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't confess to telling a lie.
Great mayor.
a great mayor. So boiling he's one who never saw the miracle. He was there, but he never saw it. But so it's... but he's the only one, apparently, who never saw it.
Did people leave that event thinking that they had seen a miracle?
Absolutely. They cried out, it's reported in the O Secolo, the name of the magazine. In fact, the journalist was attacked, even though he was leading the charge against Fatima.
Yeah, he was a skeptic in the beginning.
He was a skeptic, and then other journalists attacked him for it. He then defended himself in another article 2 weeks later, even insisting more so. And he said in reporting this, the people called it, oh, Marvel, a miracle. You know, the people all thought they saw a miracle, certainly.
How long did the mayor keep these kids captive?
Well, he took them on. First of all, he integrated Lucy on the 11th, and the 12th, I think it was. And the day afterwards, he came back and he said, I've changed my mind. I want to be part of the pilgrimage, and he insisted on driving them to the Kova, which is only a mile away, and the children didn't want to go, but the parents let them go. He then drove them to the parish priest's house, and then after that he said the parish priest will want to talk to you, and the parish priest found himself, the governor at the time was anti-Catholic, was Masonic mayor, and he was
okay.
He tried to implicate the priest in being part of this. And then as soon as he left the church, he left the parish priest's house, he bundled him into his carriage and off he went to Oram, which is about 10 miles away down the highway, the roadway anyway, towards and away from the Covadira where the apparition was taking place. How long did he keep them? He kept them there for overnight, 1 or 2 days, apparently.
Tried to scare the daylights out of them.
Yes, they were. In fact, Jacinta was crying, not because she was going to die. She was being threatened, of course, to be boiled in oil if she wouldn't reveal the secret, or she wouldn't deny seeing Our Lady, and she wouldn't do either. And nor were the others. She was going to cry, though, because she wouldn't see her mother again. So
jeez.
Lucy and Francesco tried to console her by, they were in jail. They were put in jail and with the common criminals there, the pickpockets and drunks and whatever. And that's where Jacinta, in fact, got lice from the prison.
And they died. Those two children died early, didn't they?
They died in, one died in 1919 and one died in 1920. 1919, Francesco, her brother, Lucia was 10, Francesco was 9, and Jacinta was 7, and when the apparitions took place. And he died in 1919, about a year and a half after the last apparition, and she died in February 1920. She's quite an extraordinary, both of them are extraordinary, of course, but in Jacinta's case, Our Lady appeared to her and asked her if she was willing to suffer more for the conversion of sinners, and she said yes. So
it's an amazing story. Father, hold on with us. We're going to take this break. We're talking to Father Nicholas Gruner about the secrets of Fatima. Our guest tonight, Father Nicholas Gruner, we're talking about Fatima. And by the way, our television show is available for you to watch 10 days for free, internet-based, called Beyond Belief. Plus, you have access to thousands of videos. That's the deal. So go take a look. Take advantage of the 10 days free and see if you like it. Go to GaiamTV.com/George, GaiamTV.com/George, or coasttocoastam.com. Click hosts, and the little TV banner opens up. Father, very fascinated about this angel that made the initial visitation. What do we know about this angel story?
Well, the angel was, I think it was St. Michael the Archangel, but he identified himself three different ways. He said that he is the angel of peace. He then he said he's the angel, guardian angel of Portugal. And in the last appearance of him in October, in the fall, was he was the angel of the Blessed Sacrament. He brought the Holy Communion. And all those three titles fit St. Michael, that he's known in his litany of the angel as the angel of peace. He's also invoked by the Portuguese as a protector of their country, and he is the angel of the Blessed Sacrament. But he never mentioned his name as Michael in this case.
And he was friendly to the little children?
He was. But they had his strength was... they never spoke about this until many years afterwards. It was Our Lady. They said the difference was with Our Lady, they felt so expensive, but with the angel, they felt this tremendous strength, and they felt that they shouldn't speak about it to anybody else but themselves. But he was very friendly to them, and he says, "What are you doing? Pray very much. The Holy Hearts of Jesus and Mary have merciful designs concerning you. Offer praise and sacrifices constantly to the Most High." And finally, this is the first time Lucy answers, "How do you make sacrifices? Make everything you do a sacrifice," he answers, "and offer to God as an act of reparation for sins by which he is offended, and a supplication of the conversion of sinners. This way you will draw down peace upon your country. I am its guardian angel, the angel of Portugal. Above all, accept and bear with submission whatever suffering the Lord sends you." So you can see that he answers their question, and he rebukes them. "What are you doing? You should be praying more," he says. But at the same time, he encourages Lucy to speak. And so he's at the same time, in the fall, he teaches them. He prostrates on the ground. He comes with the Blessed Sacrament in his hand, and the chalice and the blood goes from the host into the chalice, and he leaves it suspended in the air, and he prostrates on the ground before the Blessed Sacrament, and he teaches the children to do the same, and then he has them repeat this prayer after him: "O Most Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, I adore thee profoundly, and I offer thee the most precious body and blood, soul and divinity of the same Son, Jesus Christ, present in all the tabernacles of the world, in reparation for those sacrileges, outrages, and indifferences for which he is offended. And through the infinite merits of the Most Sacred Heart and the Immaculate Heart of Mary, I beg of thee the conversion for sinners." Then he said, "Take and drink the body and blood of Jesus Christ, horribly outraged by ungrateful men. Make reparation for their crimes and console your God." The angel was, you just mentioned that you're calling from the City of the Angels. Actually, Los Angeles is really the city of the Santa Maria de Los Angeles, St. Mary of the Angels. Of course, she's the Queen of the Angels.
Well, Father, the message, why deliver the message to three innocent children? Why not, to the elders of the area? Why Portugal? Why not Rome?
Well, I mean, some people think that if the Blessed Virgin wanted to tell the Pope to do something, she would appear to him directly, but I would say that the three children were perhaps more, more receptive. They wouldn't be confused by all sorts of theological ideas.
Was this a worldwide story at that time?
It became known over the ages. We can see what happened in Portugal, for example, because when Portugal, was actually in the throes of an anti-Catholic government, and that the churches were being closed there by the Masons who had overthrown the Catholic king in 1910. And yet by 1930 or thereabouts, this was all reversed because the faithful took Fatima more seriously. But when the miracle took place, I didn't mention to you that the government of Portugal called out the army to prevent the people from coming, but there were so many people.
Really?
Yes. And they
came from everywhere? All walks of life?
All walks of life, and they walked for... Some of them walked for days to be there.
It's like the Star of Bethlehem all over again, almost.
Yeah, the people, I mean, this is Lucy herself in her memoirs talks about how, it was like biblical times, and even though they're just peasant children, the people would come up to them and beg for prayers for their son was missing in war, or someone who was sick, or dying, or lost. For example, there's a famous story of someone who was lost, couldn't be found, and asked for their prayers, and he was found a few days later. So,
didn't the Vatican say that they had already released the third secret? It was already out.
Well, the Vatican, more exactly, Cardinal Bertone and Cardinal Ratzinger in 2000, June 26th, said they released the whole of the third secret.
Ratzinger became Benedict, right?
That's right. And after that, we read their proofs, and we knew, of course, that it was not true. We knew that we said it was part of the secret, but the whole thing, and the most important part they left out. And we've written books on it. We have The Devil's Final Battle. It's gone into several hundred thousand copies. The secret's still hidden. And we pointed out there with the proofs, you know, we have 10 facts and more to prove that there's two documents. And in fact, we finally have a witness to come forward. He's still alive. He's about 97 years old now.
What happened?
Archbishop Cavaglio, who said he was the secretary to John 23rd. He said there's another attachment. And then the Italian press has reported that. But
So they only released what they wanted to release.
They only released the description of a vision. But it's, of course, completely inconsistent with Our Lady's way. She, when she showed them a vision of hell, she said at the end of it, she said, you've seen hell. Now, the children knew they'd seen hell. It was so graphic, they couldn't figure it. But in this case, it's much more, shall we say, hard to decipher. Our Lady was certain to describe what they were seeing. And that's what's missing is Our Lady's description. Even though we know from what Lucy wrote that the first part of the description starts off with, in Portugal, the dogma of the faith will always be preserved, etc. The etc. Refers to the part that she didn't write, which Our Lady continued to speak. And yet, when the Vatican gave us the third secret, they made no reference to this thing at all. Obviously, Our Lady doesn't finish in the middle of a sentence.
Right. You know. Well, let me ask you this. What was the third secret that the Vatican announced?
Well, what they announced, and it's quite curious, by the way, it's a prophecy or foretelling of a future event. It foretells a bishop. They thought it was the Holy Father. She doesn't say it's the Holy Father. She said, there's a bishop dressed in white. We thought it was the Holy Father. And he's going through a half-destroyed city, and he's stepping over the corpses of various people who are dead, and he prays for these corpses on the way. And then he climbs up a mountain or a hill, and as he climbs up there at the foot of a cross, he is shot and killed by arrows and bullets. And after he is killed, various bishops and priests and religious and lay people are killed after him. That's what they try to tell us that was the assassination attempt of John Paul II on May 13th, 1981. Of course, that doesn't fit at all. And I mean, in their releasing of this, Cardinal Bertone, he was then Archbishop, Cardinal Bertone said that the Pope read the secret, Pope John Paul II read it when he was in the hospital in 1981. But yet his porta voce, his spokesman for the press, said he read it in a few days after he was elected in 1978. Obviously, there are two texts. We have two reports of Paul VI reading on two different dates, years apart. John Paul II, and for that matter, John 23rd, read it about 6 months apart from in 1959, again in 1960. We don't know the date of the 1961, but it's August 17th, 1959. But it's because there were two texts kept in two different places. One is in the Holy Office, which is about a 10-minute walk from the Papal Apartment to the Holy Office. It's in the Vatican. It's, I know both places quite well. And one was kept in the drawer of the desk, which was called Barbagio, because it was named after St. Gregory Barbagio, who owned it several hundred years ago. And there was John 23rd had that desk in his office, in his papal apartment. And when Paul VI was asking for this secret, they couldn't find it. They called up none other than Archbishop Capovilla.
They couldn't find it? Wow.
They couldn't find it. In fact, according to a Vatican journalist, I watched on TV a recording of it. He said that when they brought him the document, he said, I don't want that one. I want the real one. And then they called the secretary of John 23rd, and he said it's in the papal apartment. Whereas Bertone keeps telling us the document they're talking about was always in the Holy Office. So there's two different places it's been kept. Two different dates of its arrival. One came on the 4th of April. One came on the 16th of April, 1957. Two different places. One is 62 lines long. The other one is 25 lines long. We have In fact, Cardinal Bertone was confronted with this on Italian television, Porta Porta, in 2007, on May 31st, and he couldn't answer how Cardinal Ottaviani said it's 25 lines long.
Regardless of which one it is, was it retyped from the original, or is this the original?
No, it's in her handwriting. Both of them are in her handwriting.
Okay.
And as I say, one is one has margins of 3/4 centimeters, and the other one doesn't have any margins. There's so many choices. They're talking about two documents. There's no other way around it. And then we deduced it from all these facts which you knew about it. And finally, we have Capabila coming forward and saying there's an attachment besides the one they've given us. And when a journalist asked him, how can you say that Paul VI read this secret on the 27th of June, 1963, when Bertone says it was read on the 27th of March, 1965? He said, well, I'm not lying, he said. And he said, I'm quite lucid. And the journalist said to him, so I know you, I'm not suggesting you're lying, but there's two written documents, your written document at the time and this other one. How do you explain this?
Why did this stay a secret for so long, maybe even now?
Why? Because it is so powerful. As Maliki Martin said on your program years ago, that the churches, when they finally give, he didn't say because they didn't mention there's two texts, but when they finally give the full text, people will be in their churches on their knees beating their breasts, and there will be long lines for people going to confession.
Oh my gosh! All right, to me then, it sounds like it might be tied to the Book of Revelation.
Yeah, it definitely is.
You believe that too?
Well, Lucy herself said, if you want to know the secret, read it in chapters 8 to chapter 12 of the Apocalypse. And when John Paul II went to Fatima, and when Paul VI went to Fatima, they both quoted chapter 12, verse 1, the woman clothed with the sun with the moon under her feet and crown of 12 stars. But John Paul II, when he went to Fatima the last time, he said, the message of Fatima is a divine warning to not follow the tail of the dragon that drags down 1/3 of the stars of heaven. That's chapter 12, verse 4. Well, the stars of the heaven are commonly understood by Catholic exegetes as being the Catholic clergy, for the simple reason that the stars of heaven are, what do the stars do? The stars is traditionally, shall we say, or in scriptural times, even up to recent times, were used to guide a person to his port, where he was trying to go to. And the stars of heaven show you your way to heaven, that is, how to get to your heavenly home. Well, the stars of heaven are the Catholic clergy, as it says in Scripture, the lips of the priests are to guard wisdom. And 1/3 of the priests have been taken over by the devil, have been dragged down through the mud by the devil, and that's why the message of Fatima is basically telling the faithful not to follow the stars of heaven that have been taken over by the devil.
Well, and that is astronomical. That 1/3 is a huge number, isn't
it? Absolutely. Well, there's 410,000 priests, more or less, 410,000. Which, if you take 1/3 of those, 130,000 priests, something like that.
Will they follow the Antichrist?
Well, I hope not, but if they don't convert, yes, they will.
Well, you never know. You never know, indeed. I want you to, if you could, and we're going to talk a little bit about this next hour, describe the Book of Revelation, what it is, how it came to be, and what it's supposed to mean.
Well, this is tall order, but we'll try to do our best.
Okay.
Should I start now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, St. John the Evangelist wrote the Book of Revelation in his old age. I think he was on the island of Patmos, if I recall. And it was a vision that he was given to write down, and which he did. And for the first part of the book, the first chapters talk about the seven churches. Well, I mean, it would be like what we would call a diocese today. The church would be the diocese, how we say, of New York or of Washington. In those cases, the cities of Asia were mentioned, and the churches had virtues and faults, and he was pointing out to the church that they one lacked charity, but they stood up for the truth, and that standing for the truth was a good thing, but they should be more charitable, and so forth. But the Apocalypse, as it goes on, is also telling of events yet to take place, and which are, I believe, unfolding now, at least part of it. And this great battle is talked about, the dragon in chapter
Well, and it's tied in, it's tied to the date of Israel, isn't it?
Tied to the what?
The date of Israel becoming a nation, a state.
Oh, I don't think so, but...
I've always heard that, that the clock started in 1948.
Well, there's some people who think that, but I think that the first interpretation of that would be that the Israel of God is those who followed Christ, that, as Moses said, that those of the people who would not accept the Messiah when he came would be cut off from the people. And so that the interpretation of that would certainly be, shall we say, quite possibly Protestant or Jewish, but not a Catholic interpretation of those who have studied it well, I believe. But anyway, there are people, even Catholics, who think that the date of 1948 was somehow or other the beginning of... I don't think it has much other than that the people... That's what the whole Crusades were about in the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
The Holy Land belongs to the Christians because we inherit the promise from Abraham. We inherit the promise from Abraham. We are the chosen people, having been grafted on by baptism to the seed, is in the singular, as St. Paul points out in Galatians, the seed which is Christ. And we are baptized into Christ, and therefore we inherit the promise of Abraham. But that, of course, is not how the Zionists would accept it, or many Protestants. But I obviously, that's why we have a Catholic Church that has the power to interpret. I'm not sure this has been defined.
But who do we know who's right?
Well, that's where Saint Paul tells us the church is the pillar and ground of truth, and therefore that's why, you know, in other words, God wrote the Bible. So if you want to know, or if you write a book or whatever, and somebody says, well, what did you mean by this? You ask the author what his intention was, and that's the first. And so the author of the Bible being the Holy Ghost, we ask him what he means by it. This is how these things get resolved by theologians discussing and finally getting a papal ruling from the Pope, infallible ruling. But I'm not familiar with the rulings on the apocalypse, other than it has to be, of course, read in conformity with all the rest of the sacred scripture.
It seems that regardless when it starts, it's going to be horrible for people.
Well, yeah, I think that... why I'm very hopeful is that there have been 14,400 wars in the last 6,000 years of recorded history, and yet Our Lady promises the whole world an era of peace.
Gosh, that would be wonderful.
And it's very simple. If only the Pope would simply, the next Pope, obviously the last seven Popes haven't done it, would simply consecrate, that is, say a prayer of 5 minutes together with the bishops in a solemn way, just saying, I consecrate the country, the people of Russia, to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And for that gesture of honor towards the Blessed Virgin that our Lord wants, he will give the grace of world peace.
Just simply doing that?
Just simply doing that. Now, I've been at this for 35 years and more, and the question is, well, what harm is there in doing this prayer? Let's just say, for the moment, I don't believe it's wrong at all, but let's just say it does nothing. So what's it
cost? Yeah, no one gets hurt from that. So stay with us, Father. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM.